Video commentator for the Lady Bears. Hopefully, we'll get to go out on top there.
I hope so.
In your final year.
That's the plan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Opposite Lori on the stage is Mr. Joel Allison, Baylor's chairman of the Board of Regents. We welcome Joel back to Dallas as he retired this time last year as the president and CEO of Baylor Scott & White, and was in the healthcare management for 40 years. And so now, Mr. Allison. Now the 15th president of Baylor University. I like that we've only had 15 presidents. Dr. Linda Livingstone. Dr. Livingstone returned to Baylor on June 1 of last year after serving as the business school dean at both George Washington and Pepperdine. She has already endeared herself to the current students. I know that I've seen her at a whole lot of men's and women's basketball games with her husband, Brad. I actually walked by you in the concourse the other day. I didn't get to say hi, but I enjoy seeing you guys there. But she has made a lot of bold moves to elevate Baylor as one of the preeminent universities across the country. And so, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Baylor Conversation Series.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you all so much for being here this evening. We have a great crowd here tonight. Sean, thank you very much for the very kind introduction. We appreciate that. And to all of you, the purpose for tonight is to gather for a bit of a fireside conversation and to discuss the state of Baylor University, and to do that with our president, Dr. Livingstone, and chair of the Board of Regents, Joel Allison. Then once we finish just having a conversation, we want to open up an opportunity for you to ask any questions that have not been addressed as part of the conversation tonight. And also, just so you know, future cities, we did open up with the conversation series a few weeks ago in Fort Worth. We'll be in Houston, Austin, Denver, Atlanta, several stops in California, and then we will also be on the road to Washington, D.C. coming up throughout the spring and the summer. And a reminder to you that audio of tonight's presentation is being recorded, and we will make that audio available as well, and we'll post that online afterwards. Dr. Livingstone, let's go ahead and get the conversation started, and let's talk with you about your presidency. It's hard to believe that about a year has passed since you were announced as Baylor's 15th president. How has the past semester and a half gone for you since you have been president? And then how would you describe the state of affairs at Baylor University?
Well, thank you, Lori, and it's great to have all of you with us this evening, and Dallas is such a wonderful place for us to come and spend time, so thank you for taking time out of your evening to join us. There's actually a couple of Oklahoma State people that are in the audience here instead of watching the Cowboys in the NIT, so we appreciate you guys being here tonight. But, you know, I think April 18th was when I was announced as president, so we are just almost exactly at a year from that announcement, and I just have to say the first, you know, semester and a half has been a wonderful and a special experience for me and for my family. We've been so warmly welcomed by the Baylor family, and really reminded over and over again how much people love Baylor, want to be connected with the institution, help us move the university forward. And since I've been here, we've done a lot of listening around campus and certainly around the state and around the country so that I get acclimated to the university, learn about where we are, where we need to go. And so it's been just a really fabulous, you know, kind of beginning to my presidency. In terms of kind of the state of the university and where we are, you know, I have to say we are an unbelievably strong and resilient institution, even through the difficult challenges we've had over the last couple of years. And some of the measures of that are kind of concrete metrics that matter to all universities. Our enrollment is very strong. We had a class of 3,300 this year, one of our strongest academic classes ever, our most diverse class of students ever, and they're just really doing an exceptional job on our campus as freshmen. We're deep into the recruiting class for next year. That class is looking very strong as well. It may come in slightly larger than this last fall's class. We're shooting for a class of about the same size, about 3,300. Right now, it's tracking to be our most academically qualified class ever in the history of Baylor. And again, a very, very diverse class as well. So we're feeling really good about interest in Baylor, families and students understand the unique experience we provide and want to come and be a part of that. Our giving has remained strong. We have raised over $100 million for six straight years, including last year, and we're tracking this year to probably come in slightly ahead of that. So that, again, is a signal that people are continuing to stay committed and engaged with the university, and so we're really pleased about that. And then certainly one of our big accomplishments this year was completing the 105 recommendations that came out of the Pepper Hamilton report. And so we really have worked through those, completed those, and continue to focus on how we embed them completely into our culture and make them just a natural part of what we do every day. So it's been a very busy year, a productive year, but again, just really illustrates what a special place Baylor is and how strong and resilient we are as a university.
And one of the things I know we'll talk about here in just a few minutes is the academic strategic plan. I know that's an incredibly part of the university and of your presidency. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. Chairman Allison, the Board of Regents underwent a massive governance, some updates and some changes to governance. That was about this time last year, a little over a year ago. How has this changed the board? And why are these governance reforms so vital to Baylor?
Thank you, Lori, and thank you, Sean, for your kind introduction, and thank you all for being here this evening. We really appreciate the opportunity to be with you. It's great for me, as Sean said. We've been gone, my wife and I have been gone from Dallas for about a year, and we miss our dear friends, and it's great to be back and get to reacquaint with wonderful friends that we have here in Dallas. Driving up, we did not miss the traffic. Friends we miss, traffic no. But seriously, it's great to be with you all. And let me just say a couple of things. One, and there are several of my colleagues from the board here this evening, and I appreciate that. We did realize that we needed to make some changes in our governance structure. We know these past couple of years have been very difficult and challenging, and it was really the board that said we need to do some serious review of the governance of the university and how we perform. And so there was the decision by the board to appoint a governance review task force. And the way we did that was to appoint three non-regents and three regents to work as a task force, because we thought it was very important that we not just have regents, that we had folks, independent non-regents, and very talented, capable leaders working with us. The chair of that task force was a non-regent, and Greg Benneman, and that was important to us as well. So we did go through some major changes, and we have completed three meetings under our new structure, and I'd like to just highlight some of the significant changes, because we felt like these were going to be the changes that were, one, appropriate, reflected best governance practices by organizations and universities. We spent a lot of time in our retreat last year in July talking about governance practices and how to be a really high-performing board as Board of Regents. And so the task force brought forward about 50 recommendations to change our structure. They were adopted by the board and have begun to be implemented over this past year, as I said. And things that we have changed, I think, are very important and significant to help us move forward. One is that we now have three vice chairs. In the past, we had one chair, vice chair. And when they asked me to step in as chair, I want to say right up front, one of the reasons that I was willing to do that, because my wife did not move me to Waco and retire to become chair of the Board of Regents, I can assure you. If you ask her, she will tell you. But it's been an honor and a privilege, and I'm humbled by the opportunity to serve. But the chair, I found out, I looked when they asked me to be chair, I said, okay, what are my powers of the chair? I found out with the governance changes, I have two powers. Very important. One, I get to appoint the parliamentarian. That's big. Seriously. Secondly, if I am mentally and capable able to, I can chair the board meeting. Now, I have some folks that question that each time we get together. But in all seriousness, that's the three vice chairs. That is very important because they are assisting with the board looking in specific areas. And it's been very helpful. Some of the other major changes. We wanted to really understand transparency. There was a lot of concern that the board was insular, it was maybe controlled by a few, but that we wanted to be very open with the board, very transparent also with our constituents. So we talked a lot about that. And one of the things that we've done, we've taken where before we had six committees, we expanded that to eight committees now. And those committees are academic affairs. We have student life, university leadership and compensation, which we split out. The reason we have eight instead of six, we split two committees. One was university leadership and compensation from nominating governance. So we have a separate nominating governance committee. We have facilities and finance, or finance and facilities committee. And then we took audit and compliance, which was one committee, and we split that. So we have an audit committee and a compliance committee because of the importance that we wanted to put in both those areas. So, and then the other one is development and advancement committee. So again, and then there is an executive committee, but the executive committee has absolutely limited power. And one of the changes we made was that every board of regent member can go to all the committee meetings. We set up our structure. We used to meet on Thursday committees, and they'd meet simultaneously, a couple of committees each time, and then our full board on Friday. We now start on Wednesday morning because every member is allowed to go to every committee meeting. We have a conference call. We send out the message to the board that they can call in. The executive committee meets for information on a monthly basis. But again, it's open to all the Board of Regents. The other thing that we did was we expanded the board. Oh, I also want to mention we eliminated the athletic committee, which was a best practice. And one of the things that we wanted to look at across the country was what are the best practices for leading universities. Another area that we changed was adding voting regents. We now have 41 voting regents, one ex officio. And we felt that was important, again, to be more transparent, to open up. So whereas before we had ex officio Board of Regent members, one was from the Bear Foundation, one was from the Letter Winners Association, they now vote. We have faculty, two faculty members now that vote. We have two students. We have a junior student usually and a senior student, and so we made the second year student regent, a voting member, and the first one is ex officio. We also, in this governance structure, set up of a committee of regent emeriti. And the chair of the regent emeriti would then serve on the board with vote and would also serve on the executive committee with vote. Well, right now, we have two living regent emeriti, Sue Getterman, Drayton McLean. And Drayton was selected as chair. And so he now is a voting member of the Board of Regents. We also have something that's very important to us as well, and that's we have four alumni elected regents. And in fact, I think two are standing for election at this time with the alumni. So that's a very important component of our Board of Regents, and that's new. In fact, since 2015, and by the end of this year, May, which is the end of our normal regent year, we will have 35% new regents since that time coming on board as voting members of the Board of Regents. So again, a lot of discussion about best practices. I will also say right here and now, we are blessed that God called Dr. Livingstone to Baylor University at this particular time. She is a dynamic leader. If you look up in the dictionary, or I guess today, Wikipedia, whatever you look it up, look up the words servant leader. You will find Dr. Livingstone's picture in all seriousness. She is a 24/7 president. She is doing a great job running the university. She's putting her team together at this time. She's got some great executives and leadership around her, and she's filling a couple of key spots is she'll probably talk a little bit about. But let me tell you, we are blessed. She is engaged with the students, the faculty, the constituents. It's been a pleasure. I have always believed, and I've worked with some wonderful, very talented, capable executives over my 40-plus years in healthcare. Dr. Livingstone is one of the most talented, capable leaders I've ever met, and makes my job easy because I don't have to do anything. We're here as a board to support Dr. Livingstone. And that was one of the things we talked a lot about. What's the role of the board? In fact, in July of last year, we spent a full day preparing for the board retreat, talking about the role and responsibilities of the board. And I'm one of those that have always believed, and I was taught this throughout my career because I've served some great boards and leaders and as a CEO and been on boards. One of the most important relationships for a high-performing organization is the relationship between the chair and the CEO. And I want to say from my perspective, we have a great relationship, and I appreciate her so much. But we decided we have really three roles as a board. The board has three roles. One is a fiduciary. That's the oversight. You look at your budget, you look at your finances, and make sure you're in compliance and all the requirements. Number two is that you have a strategic role. And that's what's exciting about where you're going to hear more about the strategic plan. That's really, you look at fiduciary as oversight, strategic is foresight, and then the third is generative, where you really provide insight. But Dr. Livingstone and I talked about the fact that I'm going to keep the board in their lanes that they need to be in and be the board and a high-performing board, and Dr. Livingstone is going to work with his team, her team, to keep them in their lanes is what we talk about. The board also adopted how we would make decisions going forward because we wanted input from everybody on the board. We wanted to hear every voice. And so we have four non-negotiables that the board accepted on how we would make decisions going forward based on recommendations from management. Number one, if we make this decision, will it keep Baylor a Christ-centered university? Number two, will it be supportive and represent the mission of Baylor University? Number three, will it reflect the core convictions of Baylor University and who we are? And the fourth is, are we doing the right thing for the right reason? And if you run that screen through your decision and say, yes, 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 I would submit you're going to make a good decision. But I am excited about where we're going under Dr. Livingstone's leadership. We are here as a board to support her and her vision and her view of where the university is headed, and you'll hear more about that this evening.
We'll talk more about the vision and moving forward, but Dr. Livingstone, can you give us any update on the legal front and the ongoing investigation? So when do we think lawsuits and those investigations will be fully resolved?
Sure. So let me talk about lawsuits and then investigations. So we right now have five lawsuits that we're working on related to the sexual assault issues that occurred. And those are at different stages. We have, I think, a couple of court dates set. I think all of those are into 2019. So if those fully go through the court process, it will be a couple more years before we get those resolved. Certainly what we've learned through this process is that the victims in those cases need different types of resolution. Sometimes for them, getting resolution through the court system is the appropriate thing for them to bring healing and resolution. For others, it is to reach some kind of a settlement, and we have certainly done that in several cases. There is one case you've probably heard the most about. It tends to get the most attention because we've had a lot of sort of legal working back and forth, and that's what's called the Jane Doe 1 through 10 case. The reason you've heard so much about that is there's a lot of legal questions around access to information and discovery. The plaintiff's lawyers want to access a lot of medical and counseling records of non-party students, students who are not a part of that lawsuit, based on some of the claims that they're making. We, of course, believe that those records should be protected. They are FERPA protected, and that they should not be accessible if those students are not parties to the lawsuit. So that's where you're seeing a lot of information about that particular case. And it's really sort of legal discussions going on, kind of tangential to the actual core issues of the case. So that one is a court date has been set for that, but it's into 2019. There are currently five investigations going on. One of those is the Big 12. We anticipate that one will probably come to closure sooner than any of the others. We're working very closely with them. They're auditing our 105 recommendations to see if they feel confident that we have completed those 105. We have had an external audit independent of the Big 12 indicate that they have been, and then SAC, COC, our accrediting body, has affirmed that those have been completed. And then the Big 12 has their own outside firm that is looking at those. And we are very close to wrapping that up. We're kind of cleaning up a few things for them. So we're hopeful that that will be wrapped up fairly soon. We also have two cases going on with the Department of Education. One is a Cleary case and one is an Office of Civil Rights case. Oftentimes, Cleary cases can take 3 to 4 years. That is likely to be the one that is longer than anything else to be resolved. Although that we are getting some messaging through the Department of Education, they are changing some kind of procedural and time issues around both Cleary and OCR. So it is possible that those could be resolved in a shorter time frame than we have seen over the past probably 5 to 10 years, but it's still a little bit too early to tell. We're continuing to cooperate, provide them all the information that they need. The other two are the NCAA and the Texas Rangers. And again, those, we don't know exactly what time frame to expect on both of those, but we again are cooperating, providing them with all the information that they need, giving them access, and are doing everything we can to move those forward as quickly as possible, but it's a little hard to predict the exact time frame on either one of those.
And then last week, Coach Rule had disclosed to the media that several football student athletes had been separated from the team and would miss spring practice because of allegations of sexual misconduct. What can you tell us about that?
Let me begin by saying that we take any incidents of sexual violence on our campus very, very seriously and do everything we can to ensure that the victims of that are getting the support and care that they need to work through that issue. I will certainly say about this particular case, which happened in the fall, the incident itself happened in the fall, that all of us on campus were very disheartened when that happened, and certainly Coach Rule was, particularly given how much significant effort across campus we have put into training and education for our students, faculty, and staff around these types of issues to certainly try to help prevent it, but also to help ensure that people know how to report these incidences. And in fact, Coach Rule puts in a tremendous amount of extra work with the football team. They probably do 6 to 8 hours of extra training beyond the training our typical students get, and then we also do extra training for our student athletes, and then he does more beyond that for the football players. He tweets, you may have heard him talk about this, he tweets every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night to his football players, reminding them about how they need to conduct themselves. So we certainly are doing everything we can to try to remind our students and to train them about how they need to conduct themselves in these kinds of situations. Of course, when you're on a campus with many young people, and sometimes there's alcohol involved in these incidences, and sometimes they use very poor judgment, and then we have to work on how we deal with that. What I can assure you is that we have the mechanisms in place now, the policies and procedures, and the education so that these incidents, is certainly we're trying to prevent them, but they do occur, that they're being reported, and then when they are reported, that we are following the appropriate processes and procedures to investigate and adjudicate the processes. And in this particular case, it is in the investigation and adjudication phase. It was reported properly through the right channels. It was turned over to Title IX and the police in appropriate ways and in a timely manner. Those two offices have done their investigations according to our processes. And we know people want to hear more details about cases like this, but one of the things we know about Title IX cases is that confidentiality is really important in these cases because it's so important in the investigation to get at the truth. We have young people's lives at stake on both sides of these issues, and you get a cleaner investigation and more likely that you get to the truth when there's confidentiality around the investigation. And so we're in that process, and once that's done, we will make a determination about the appropriate way to resolve it with regard to the parties involved. And so that's where we are, and we'll continue to work through that particular case, but certainly ensure that we're doing the right things in all of the cases that come up on campus.
Thank you very much, Dr. Livingstone. Appreciate that. Both the board, Mr. Allison, and the university have made great strides over the past 12 to 18 months. With that said, you talk a lot about unity among the Baylor family, bringing the Baylor family together. How do you go about restoring trust with alumni and friends? And when you talk about unity, how do we know when we get there?
Thank you, Lori. And it's very important. And this evening is an example, I think, and an indication of what we're trying to do to restore that trust and that unity of the Baylor family. That's extremely important for us to be able to move forward. And Dr. Livingstone and I talked about this a lot, and I felt when I was asked to step in as a chair that two things were very important to me as we move forward, and hopefully others, and Dr. Livingstone agrees 100%. One is to restore the trust in the Board of Regents, because in many respects, perhaps we lost that, but we can bring that back by being transparent, by doing the governance changes we've made. The other important part was to unify the Baylor family. And let me just say, we've done a lot of listening, a lot of visiting. I've talked to a lot of different folks, constituents, and where I come from as an individual, number one, I've got friends everywhere that there may be pockets of disagreement, and I've talked to them. The alumni, I'm a lifelong alumni association member. I'm a letter winner member. I'm a Bear Foundation member. I've listened and talked to people who have a love and a concern, and what is the common theme, no matter what the issues may be, the conversations outside the university, everyone loves Baylor. And we've been through 2.5 years of a lot of pain, a lot of embarrassment, a lot of hurt. It is extremely important that we're able to really bring back the unity of the Baylor family and work on that by being open, by really talking. And we spent a lot of time at the July retreat last year talking about the difference between transparency and confidentiality, because that's a tough line, as Dr. Livingstone was talking about. And let me tell you, 45 years in healthcare, I thought healthcare was the most complex, regulated industry in the country. I was wrong. Very wrong. Academics is the most complex, regulated organizational industry in the country. In all seriousness, and you've heard, we've got 2 years. I always tell people, we still have 2 years of heavy lifting. As you've heard, the things that we want to work through, the investigations and the reviews, the lawsuits. And we will get through that with a lot of humility and a lot of prayer. And I'm so thankful for the prayers of you all for the university and for our leadership and for our students. So as we continue to reach out and have dialogue and communicate and find ways to move forward on behalf of the mission of Baylor and to remind ourselves every day what we do is about our students and giving them a Christian environment to learn, to be educated, to become worldwide leaders and servants. So it's very important that we continue this. Dr. Livingstone is doing a great job of communicating. We've got to communicate better and be open. We live in a time of communication, and we need to continue to tell our story instead of others telling it for us. And with that, I believe that we can continue to demonstrate why we all love Baylor and what it means to us. And as a family, it's very important.
Well said. Dr. Livingstone, when you became president, you introduced three words to us: strong, secure, strategic. Can you give us some kind of progress? What kind of progress have we made
sure.
in those areas?
Yeah. When I arrived last summer, I worked on with the leadership team of the university and with the board on some goals that we needed to work on for this year. And we sort of framed them under those three headings: strong, secure, and strategic. And we've made great progress. I won't hit on everything, but just a few things. In the area of strong, it was really around leadership and building leadership capacity at the university. And several things that are going on there. I did some restructuring of my leadership team that we now call the President's Council. We reduced the size of that group slightly and repositioned some people in that. And then we are now currently searching for two key positions at the university, kind of the two positions probably closest to the president, and that's our provost and our chief business officer, which has been our chief operating officer in the past. And so we're in the middle of those searches. We are at sort of the airport interview stage. I don't know if that's a term you use in other industries. We use it in education a lot. So we're to a pool of like 5 to 7 people in each of searches, and then we'll identify the top probably three or so and bring them to campus. Our goal in both of those is to have those selected by the end of this spring semester so that they can start this summer. But though we've got strong pools in both of those, I feel really good about the potential there, and we're excited to have those people on board so that really my leadership team will be pretty much complete once we get those two positions filled and really prepare us well. And then we're going to talk about the strategic plan a little bit to really have the right leadership team in place to move that strategic plan forward as we look to the future. In terms of strong, that's really about financial and operational security of the institution. I mentioned some of the financial metrics earlier, but that also has to do with us completing our 105 recommendations. It has to do with getting off of our accreditation warning that we had and moving forward with our accreditation process this spring. And then we also did a couple of climate surveys. These were done before I came, but we analyzed and completed the results this past fall. We had a climate survey on kind of sexual violence, Title IX issues on our campus, and then we did a climate survey around diversity. And so we published the results of both of those surveys. You can find those on our website. And so those were very helpful to us. They helped us understand the things that we're doing well in both of those areas, and they helped us understand the areas where we've got work to do. And we have groups on campus working on the next steps we need to take in both of those areas to ensure that we continue to make progress. We'll do those surveys again in a couple of years to know how we're making progress. But we're doing a lot to ensure not just the financial security of the institution, but also kind of the cultural security and just safety and quality of life for the folks on our campus. And then the final area is strategic. And at the end of the day, for the long run, that's going to be the key for us. And so the core focus there this year has been building out an academic strategic plan for the institution. We have really never done a comprehensive academic strategic plan, and that's been a huge amount of the work that we've been doing. And then we are also building out around that, which we'll talk about a little bit more later, a campaign that will help support that financially. And so we've made great progress in all three of those areas that build an exceptional foundation for us as we will lay out the plan in more detail in the coming months and then move forward towards its implementation next year.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about the academic strategic plan. What can you tell all the Baylor family at this point where we are in that process? Yeah.
So this has been a busy year. As I said, we've had tremendous input from faculty, from our deans, building that plan. And at our February board meeting, we presented kind of a draft of that to our board, got great feedback from them that was extremely helpful to us. We're calling that plan Illuminate, and the idea there is it builds on the scripture in Matthew 4 about how we're to be light to the world and that we need to really shine that light in a way that has an impact. And you've probably heard me talk, if you've heard anything from my inauguration speech, about how, you know, we believe that the world needs a Baylor. And the vision that we're building the strategic plan on is Pro Futurus, which began a few years ago, and that vision talks about being a preeminent Christian research university, and there are really almost no other universities in the country that can have preeminent academic status as a legitimate research university while maintaining the integrity of their Christian mission and strengthening that Christian mission. We believe we can do it. We believe we will be one of the only, if not the only, institution in the country that seeks to do that and actually accomplishes that. In doing that, this plan will reinforce the strength of our transformative undergraduate education. It will continue to support championship-level intercollegiate athletics. It will grow and enhance our scholarly and research endeavors while also growing our graduate and professional education programs. Both of those two areas are ones that we haven't emphasized as much in the past but are critical to preeminent status as an international university. And then foundationally and most important, we will grow and develop and enrich our Christian mission as a university. And the plan will include some key academic initiatives. Right now we have about five key areas that we're focusing on. We will have a financial model that underpins that. That financial model will focus on maintaining a consistent level of undergraduate education and modest tuition increases at the undergraduate level. So in order to fund the aspirations in the academic strategic plan, we are going to focus on growing graduate and professional education, growing funded research, and a comprehensive fundraising campaign. And again, we have never done a comprehensive fundraising campaign at Baylor. And the consultants we work with said that we have an unbelievably committed base, and we absolutely can have a very successful campaign in support of these aspirations. The other piece of that campaign will be, a facilities plan. There will be some academic facilities to help support our aspirations in terms of the academic plan. There will also be a modest piece of that that will continue to enhance some of our athletics facilities, particularly in some of the areas where we are underserved in some of our women's sports, particularly. So we're very excited about the plan. We're going to present the final version of it to the board in May at the May meeting and anticipate an approval of that so we can work towards implementation, really rolling up our sleeves next fall. We're going to do a couple of sessions on campus in late March and early April with faculty, staff, and students to get feedback on that. But tremendous energy around it, lots of participation across campus, and we're just excited about what it can mean for Baylor and the opportunity it provides us to really have an even bigger influence both here in the state of Texas and across the country and around the world than we've had in the past.
Mr. Allison, the board had a chance to see the draft plan. What kind of response did the board have to that? And there are one or two things maybe that you took away from that?
Oh, definitely. It was a very positive response. And the interesting thing was, as it was discussed, as Dr. Livingston said in February in a draft form, we had a lot of dialogue, a lot of discussion, spent a lot of the board meeting. And for me, it was kind of exciting because this is the first time, my experience on the board, that we really had a chance to get into what we're supposed to be doing around strategy and being a strategic board, and hearing about a very comprehensive vision, one that aligns with the goals of the university. The neat thing is Dr. Livingstone and her team presented it to us throughout our board meeting in February, it was very apparent that they were very much aligned on this strategy and really working well together. We had a wonderful dinner one evening with the deans to break up into small groups, which was really exciting and fun to get their input. They got input from us, and there was a lot of great dialogue. Really excited about this vision, and as we have heard, and you've heard Dr. Livingstone say so many times, there is a need for a university like Baylor in this world. It has the uniqueness and the opportunity to be a world-class, preeminent Christian research university. While at the same time, it came through loud and clear to the Regents, there's still a strong emphasis on our undergraduate work as well. And I can tell you, Dr. Livingstone is very engaged with the students. She cannot walk across campus without getting mobbed. She's had more selfies made with her and sent home than I would imagine.
I've seen some of them tonight on their phones out here from their children.
If I'm trying to walk across campus with her, I just get out of the way because the students mob her. But she's there with the students, and really this vision is exciting. As I told someone, I said, when we heard about the Illuminate and all the excitement about being the light of the world, it lit me up. I thought, man, this is great. And it's very positive, and it's really where we need to be. And it gives something then for the board to continue to work with Dr. Livingstone and her team on. As you heard, we'll hear another report in May and hopefully be able to give a final approval at a high level, which again, second part of what the three areas that the board's engaged in is in strategic thinking, strategy. And it's great to be working on that instead of some of the other issues we've had to work on the last 2 years.
Well, we've got one final question. Dr. Livingstone, this one is for you. If you have been on Central Expressway, and I know you have, and if you've been shopping in the Galleria and been around where the ice rink is, you may have seen Baylor's new marketing campaign, which is called Where Lights Shine Bright. And can you tell us a little bit about that campaign?
Well, this year, one of the things that we knew we needed to do was sort of reintroduce Baylor after what's gone on over the last few years. And building on the scripture, Matthew, that I mentioned earlier, it was thinking about how do we brand ourselves as a Christian university that helps people understand why we're unique and special and isn't what you're going to see at every other university in the country. And so I have to give credit to Jason Cook over here, our Vice President for Marketing and Communication, and we have an outside firm that we've worked with that's based here in Dallas. And they together came up with this concept of light and how we need to be light to the world. And that's where we got the Illuminate name for our strategic plan. And I tell you, it has been so well received. And, you know, we've done really fun things on campus. We have lights under the benches around campus. We lit up Judge Baylor, and we had, if some of you were at the two basketball games right after the beginning of the new year, we had lights and all kinds of fun things going on at the games. But we've also used this in our campaign to recruit students to campus, and some of our research showed that some of the images, some of the concepts around this really resonate with the students that are coming, with moms who tend to have an overly strong influence on college decisions for young people. And so it's been embedded in our campaign this spring to really bring students to the campus and get them to commit to come next fall. And then, of course, you've seen what we have here in Dallas. We're doing the same thing in Houston. And then this will continue to play out, certainly in our strategic plan, as we've noted. And then it will also be a part of our philanthropic campaign when we get that rolled out. But it's been a great way to have fun around this concept, but on a very, very deep and meaningful level as a Christian university, it says a lot about who we are that really you can't say about almost any other institution in the country. And so it gives us both a lot of fun, but also a very deep and meaningful way to project Baylor to the broader community.
We are the light of the world.
That's right.
All right.
Absolutely.
Any concluding words from you?
Yeah, just a couple things.
Before we do the Q&A.
Thanks again for being here. Thanks for your love for Baylor University, our students, our faculty, our administration. And let me also say, as we try to move forward, and the website was mentioned, you can go on the website. We have a wealth of information for people that want to know more. We're trying to be very open as a board. And so we hope that you'll go there. They've got all the list of the regents, our phone numbers, our emails, and we've got all of our policies on there around the board, these governance changes. You'll see the officers, the committees, a lot of information that we want to share with you all. And the other thing is I just, again, ask you to continue to pray for us as we move forward over these next several months. And as we pray for our students, I mean, we've got wonderful students. Everyone in this room that went through Baylor has a Baylor story. We all have Baylor stories. And when you hear these students, they have their story. I was asked to speak to one of the young students who was working on a Truman Fellowship this next year, and they asked if I would speak with her about it. And I figured out why they did when she came to talk to me, because her topic that she was working on was some specifics around Medicare. Now, I don't know whether that was because I was in healthcare for 45 years or because I'm on Medicare. But anyway, we had a wonderful conversation, and I want to just learn more about her and her story. She's from Tennessee, and I said, well, how'd you get to Baylor? Did you have family? She said, no, I'm the first in my family to go to Baylor. She said, actually, what happened was I was going to the East Coast, obviously a very bright, I'm sure she was a scholar, Dr. Livingstone, one of our presidential scholars. She was taking her tour. She was going to Vanderbilt, North Carolina, Wake Forest, Harvard, and she came back home and she told her parents, she said, it just didn't feel right. I went on those campuses and it didn't feel right. And her mother said, well, why don't you go look at Baylor? She said, I didn't know anything about Baylor. She said, why don't you go look at Baylor? So she came down for one of our weekends,
premier weekends.
She was invited to come. And she said, in 20 minutes, I knew this is where I was supposed to be. And I said, well, when we've been through a lot, you're a junior, you've seen something. I said, how do you feel? She said, I love Baylor. I said, would you have made that same decision? Knowing what we, she said, absolutely. And she said, in fact, my brother will be a freshman this year. So again, our students is what it's about. We can never lose sight that why we're here is to take care and provide the environment for our students. And we pray for them at the Regents meeting, and we just ask that you continue to pray for us and the university, and pray for Dr. Livingstone. Like I said, she is 24/7. And one thing about it, if you know Brad and seen Brad, they are not inconspicuous in Waco. They cannot go anywhere without being known. So, and she is so engaging and so willing, and we want to be open. You have questions, you have issues, concerns. I have shared with our board, and many of us will go anywhere and talk to anyone, speak to anyone. And that's why we're doing these conversation series. So thank you for what you do, and thank you for your support, and thank you for your prayers.
Thank you very much for the conversation tonight and for your candor. Our university president and our board chairman, thank you both so much. We will take some questions. If you have a question, you'll do us a favor, just raise your hand. And we do have Mandy Anderson, Janice Kovar, and Toby Barnett have the microphones. So if you will raise your hand, we will bring the microphone to you. If you will be so kind as to tell us your name, we would greatly appreciate that. So do we have any questions? Right back here. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Kim Brandt, and I was the first Baylor person out of my family. But one of the reasons why I chose Baylor was the size. Mm-hmm. It's substantial.
Right.
That's concerning, but I don't.
Can you put your microphone up there?
Sorry, I'm so used to my voice pairing. But, you know, to me, large schools, you get lost. And in a really small school, it's too tiny. So right. Baylor was the perfect size. What are the thoughts about student body size going forward?
Right. Well, one of the things that we've committed to is maintaining this undergraduate student body size at what it is right now. And it's at right about 14,000 students. And we do not want to grow more than that. It had grown some over the last several years, and it actually grown a little bit larger than that. We had a very large class 4 years ago that was 3,600. That class is graduating this year, and we are not bringing in a class that large again. We're going to stay at about 3,300, which will put us at around 14,000. We think that's a good number where you can have a large enough undergraduate student body that you can provide really substantive diversity of degree programs and classes, but not so big that you just get lost in the shuffle. And then any growth, that our goal is to have any growth that we have in the student population to be at the graduate level, graduate and professional level, which is not an area we've ever focused on growing in any significant way in the past. And so we've got a new vice provost for graduate and professional education, Gary Carini, who had been our associate dean for graduate programs in the business school. And that's what he's really charged with, is a strategy for growing that. And so that's one of the commitments that we've made as part of this plan. And part of that, too, is that we are not going to achieve our aspirations as a premier research university on the backs of undergraduate tuition. And we don't believe that's the right way to do it. We don't believe that should be part of our strategy. And so we're committed to the integrity of the undergraduate program about the size that it is now.
Very good question. Thank you. Other questions? Let's see, we have two here. Have you go first? There, Bandy's coming to you.
Hi, my name is Marie Brown, and I'm a 1992 graduate of Baylor. I just have a question about how the strategic plan is going to identify diversity for faculty and staff, and even with your president's council. How are we going to look at that and increase the minority diversity in them?
Yeah. Oh, it's a great question. It is an area that we have work to do. I mentioned our student population. Our student population has actually become quite diverse, more diverse than most people actually realize it is. As I said, about 35 to 38% of our last few freshman classes have been diverse. That is not as reflected in our staff and our faculty population. Staff is more diverse than our faculty, but faculty is much less diverse. That it's a huge challenge for us and something that we are very committed to working on. And let me speak just to a few of those things. We actually have implemented a diversity hiring program where we've tried to incentivize our departments if they find really qualified, diverse candidates, even outside of a regular hiring cycle, to bring those to us. And we've set aside funds that would allow us to hire, even when might not have an opening in a particular department, if they have a really highly qualified faculty that helps us with diversity. We have some groups on. One of the things that you also find, it certainly want to hire diverse faculty, but you've got to also work on keeping them and helping them to be successful in the tenure process and really building a culture that's supportive. So we have several groups on campus that are working to help ensure the success of our underrepresented groups in our faculty, whether that's women, particularly in some fields, or people of color. And so that is an effort because we want to get more of our minority faculty through the tenure process and up to the full professor ranks. I will say that, I will tell you that I think the other piece of it is just talking a lot about it and sort of holding search committees in departments accountable for bringing in a diverse pool of candidates. Because if you have a diverse pool that comes to campus to visit, you're going to naturally have more diverse faculty coming in. So we put a lot of emphasis on who they're bringing to campus, and our provost office reviews those pools before they bring them to campus, and they're asking questions about the diversity of the pool. And I will tell you, we are not finished with our hiring for this coming fall, but it is going to be a very diverse class of faculty. We're going to make, you're starting from a fairly low base from the number, but we're going to make a big bump in our percentage of diverse faculty this fall, and we will continue that effort as we go forward. You ask about the President's Council as well. We have worked in both the searches we're doing now. We have pushed real hard to try to build diverse pools of candidates and to ensure that we are trying to have a diverse pool to bring those in. It's challenging because everybody's looking for diverse people out there, but we're working with our search firms to do that. We're working with the faculty on the Provost Search Committee, both in terms of women and people of color. We also have several positions kind of at the level below that we're going to be filling as well. And so, again, we're always pushing to try to ensure that we have diverse candidates. Our President's Council right now has four women on it, and there's 11 of us, 12 of us on that group. So it's actually much more diverse than it used to be. We do not have any people of color on the council. We certainly need to work on that as we go forward. But it's certainly very present in mind. When we surveyed the faculty about the provost, we asked them what were qualities we needed to look for in the provost and what were things we wanted them to pay attention to. One of the top priorities mentioned by the faculty and staff that filled out that survey was we need a provost that cares about diversity and is going to make that a priority for the university. So it's clearly very present of mind with everyone, but it is an area that we have a lot of progress to make. But thank you for asking.
Could I just add one thing on that? Because at the board level, it's also a goal of ours. And one of the changes in our governance reform changes we made was we now have a regent selection task force that recommends regents. And it's made up of non-regents as well as regents. And they send recommendations of candidates to the nominating governance committee. So it's a different process. And with one of the emphasis we're putting, asking that task force was to bring us candidates for diversity that we could definitely begin to show that on the board as well as in the administrative side.
Hello, my name is Bob Isaac, and I want to thank you all for coming here. I think it's been very worthwhile. I actually have two questions, one for Dr. Livingstone and one for you, Joel. And I'll ask both questions and then sit down and listen to your responses. Dr. Livingstone, you mentioned that there are three, well, you mentioned the ongoing investigations by the Big 12, the NCAA, and I think you said the Department of Education.
Right.
And I'd like to know if those investigations are overlapping or if they have distinct and separate issues that they're addressing. And for you, Joel, and I apologize, I may have misunderstood something you said regarding the restructuring of governance on the board, but I think you said that the athletic committee was done away with, and I'd like to just understand the thought behind that.
Sure.
Thank you.
Do you want to answer that?
Yeah,
I'll go second, and then I'll talk about
when
the
we had when the came forward on the governance reform task force and the discussion about the committees and where we found that the athletic committee touched on so many different areas, compliance and audit and student life, and we found from other universities when we looked out there, and because there was such a focus in that from the outside, we felt like it was best to bring that within these other committees, and that we did see that was the best practice. Several universities had eliminated the athletic committee for fear that it would always be seen as separate and apart. We wanted to make this very much appropriately be seen as, no, this is under all the other areas of the board governance in campus life, with student life, academic affairs, compliance, or even the audit process as we go through that. Because of all the regulations and requirements we have to meet.
So in regard to the five investigations, it's probably a little bit like a Venn diagram. That would be a very complicated Venn diagram. But so for instance, the Big 12 is around, did we complete the 105 recommendations? So those are all kind of around the sexual assault issues. The the NCAA is looking at whether or not we violated any NCAA rules. Those could overlap a little bit with some of the things in Title IX, but in many ways there's not a lot of overlap there because they're looking at recruiting violations and there are some governance issues that they'll look at about whether you had institutional control, so that could certainly overlap. But there's not real tight alignment there. Office of Civil Rights, those are kind of two independent. One of them is a case from a staff member that believes that her civil rights were violated related to some of the issues around the sexual assault, but that's an employee case that was filed. The Cleary case, the Cleary Act is around reporting of crimes on your campus, and there's real detailed instructions about what defines on your campus. And so they're looking at whether or not we reported accurately crimes on our campus over a window. I think it's about a 10-year window that they're looking at. And you can be fined for underreporting, which you certainly don't want to. You can also be fined for overreporting. And so that one's really kind of completely different. Now, some of those crimes could be issues that were related to the sexual assaults, but they're really looking at reporting. And then the Texas Rangers is the other one, right? That's a criminal investigation. They would look at whether there was any criminal conduct that occurred related to any of these things that flowed out of all of the sexual assault allegations and everything. And so that would be, again, related to the sexual assault cases, but a different piece of it that they're looking at, because these other groups that we're looking at weren't looking at criminal kinds of violations, whereas that's what the Texas Rangers are looking at. So there's some overlap, but yet they're all kind of independent and different in their own way. But there's a lot of the same information that we provide to all of those different groups, depending on what they're asking.
Good evening, I'm Peter McCullough, and I'm a Baylor graduate, class of 1984, and I'm a cardiologist here at Baylor University Medical Center. And my question is that when you go out in the country, I lived away from Texas for a long time, and you tell people you went to Baylor, Baylor has a great name in education, particularly a very strong brand name in medicine. So from the pre-medical training to in dentistry and nursing and health professions, and I think also very, very strong in law, and I think all would agree. But I have a niece right now who's considering going to Baylor, and she's heavily influenced by her father, who's an engineering professor.
Right.
And he's asking me, well, how good is Baylor in engineering, and what is Baylor in terms of being a research university?
Right.
In these other areas. So can you give us a bit of a vision regarding Baylor being a great Christian research university in broad areas, social sciences, humanities, et cetera?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And it's exactly what we're focusing on in the academic strategic plan. You're absolutely right. Our health reputation is fabulous, in part because of Baylor College of Medicine and those affiliations through the years. But there are other areas we're going to have to work on and grow. As I mentioned, there's kind of five academic initiative areas that we're focusing on in the academic strategic plan. One of those is in the health area, because we have a lot of strength there, and we know we can just build on that and grow it even more. But we have a couple that are in the STEM areas, so data sciences, which really will cut across almost any discipline, but it'll be an underlying foundational support and that we're going to put a lot of emphasis on. Our engineering school will be very involved in that. Our computer science department is within our engineering school. And then material science, we have a real strength in material science, and that also actually cuts across a lot of areas on our campus, even though it's an engineering field. Fashion design, our design folks want to partner on the material sciences program because they're looking for new fabrics and new ways to do fabrics. So it's a very broad-based. So a couple of the focus areas in our academic strategic plan are specifically tied to engineering and the sciences and technology. The other areas are human flourishing, which is really how do we help people to live better lives. There could certainly be more technical, science-oriented elements of that, but that it's very much tied to the humanities and the social sciences. And the other one is in Baylor in the Americas. We have a tremendous linkage into Latin America and South America. Of course, Texas has a huge influence from Latin America, and that cuts across all of our areas, social sciences, humanities as well. We look at metrics for, when you look at whether you're a preeminent research university, there's metrics around PhD programs and research funding. We actually do very well already in the humanities. It's one of our strongest areas in terms of research and PhD production. We're very strong in social sciences. We are much weaker in the STEM areas, and that's, but we have initiatives within this that will help us raise the boat in all of those areas. Some, the bar, we don't have as far to go. In other areas we do, but STEM and in those engineering and science areas is an area where we're putting a lot of emphasis. In fact, one of the facilities that will most likely be a high priority in the plan is another science and engineering research building. We have that beautiful Baylor Science Building. It's full. We're out of space. We need more space for science and engineering research. So one of our priorities for facilities will be in that area.
Hi, my name's Robert Stuckey. I graduated last year, 2017. And to you, sir, I'm a mechanical engineer. So I would love to say your niece should definitely go to Baylor. We could talk more after, but I highly recommend it.
That's the best way to sell
there
it.
There you go.
And my question is, what's the relationship between Baylor and Waco moving forward? Waco's a city with a lot of needs. High unemployment rate, high poverty rate, and I know Baylor's, you know, working on that. But you know, from your perspective, how is that going to be moving forward?
That's a great question. You know, when I left 15 years ago, there was very little significant engagement between the university and the city. And I was one of the things I was really pleased. Many things have changed since I left Waco, and both at Baylor and in the city. But one of the things I was really pleased to see when I came back was how much better the relationship was and how much more collaboration there was. So let me speak to a few things specifically. Baylor is considered what they call an anchor institute in the city of Waco. Every city has anchor institutes. Cities the size of Waco, you can have more impact as an anchor institute. Usually your educational centers, your hospitals are your anchor institutes. And so we are partnering with the city on initiatives in education to really raise the education profile, in health care, because if you have poorer parts of your community, which Waco certainly does, they're not getting the health care they need, so they don't get the education they need, and it just starts a whole array of problems. And then around employment in the city and really trying to provide employment opportunities. And part of that area in employment is we're really working very hard to help build a startup entrepreneurial culture in Waco that provides opportunities to keep our students there, to draw companies into the area. And we're really uniquely positioned because we have MCC, TSTC, and Baylor. It's unique for a city our size to have three educational institutions that really cover kind of the entire array of institutions you can have in a city. And we believe that's really important to bringing businesses to Waco. And then we have the BRIC, the Baylor Research and Innovation Collaborative, and that is a partnership with the city where we're working to bring companies into Waco that will do research, that will partner with us, with TSTC, with MCC. We also have a program we're partnering with the city on that's called Campus Town. I always get the name wrong. Campus Town. And that's specifically designed to keep college-employed students or bring college-educated students to Waco to be employed. And so we're partnering on that. We help fund that initiative. We have, of course, our students do tons of volunteer work in the city, but our education school is also working closely with the Waco School District on a couple of their schools. They've got some real challenges in some of their schools. I meet regularly with the mayor. We just had coffee together a couple of weeks ago to talk about these partnerships. So I feel really good about the way we're working together and the impact it's going to have. Jason, who I mentioned earlier, he is really has taken over responsibility for our external relations function, which is the area that works most closely with the community, and we're consolidating. We had offices in three different places on campus. They were all doing good things, but we weren't coordinating efforts. We were probably distributing resources too broadly without being able to put them in places where they could have the most impact. So we're also looking at our own internal structure and how we use our resources to make sure they're having the greatest impact in partnership with the city of Waco.
We have time for one more question. So. Last
I see a
question.
Got a
Good evening. Thank you for your sharing with us and opening up to sharing with your thoughts as well as responding to our questions. My name is Ron Bowles. I'm from class of 74, music ed, and then again in 77 with a degree in communications. Baylor has historically always had a very close and important leadership role in not only the Baylor family, but the broader Texas Baptist family. And I'm curious to know how you all, maybe through the governance changes or issues, what do you see going forward in terms of Baylor's role and responsibilities as it relates to Texas Baptist and our broader family of faith?
Yeah, appreciate that, Ron. And one thing I would say is when we have a very great relationship with Texas Baptist, I'm a Baptist General Convention of Texas appointee. There are six BGCT appointees on the board. Our requirement under governance is at least 25% of the board would be made up of BGCT appointees. So that's a very strong relationship. Several of us meet regularly with Dr. Hardage, and we just had a visit with the president of the BGCT talking about their next series of nominations for the board. And I feel from a board's perspective, we have a great relationship, and we appreciate the heritage of the Texas Baptist and what it means to the university.
And we've got one last question back here. Can you stand up? I saw you raise your arm earlier.
Steve might want to comment on that.
Is it right back?
Steve, for the BGCT.
It was right down that row. Right there. Is that you?
Over here?
Back there? Okay. All right. Well, we'll go over here. Are you sure there's not one last question back there? Okay. No, I'm not. Okay. I thought I saw a hand go up. Sorry.
I'm Steve Vernon. I'm the Associate Executive Director for Texas Baptist. And
he could answer that question better than
1973, by the way.
Thank you, Steve.
And I would say our relationship with Baylor University right now is as strong as it's ever been. And we cherish that relationship, as I think Baylor does. We enjoy the partnership, and things are just going extremely well, and we're very pleased with that. So I would just say amen to Brother Allison as he's preaching.
All right. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. And thank you all so much for your time this
evening.
Thank you. And thank you to Dr. Livingstone and Chairman Allison.
Thank you, Lord.
Thank you all. Have a safe trip home tonight, especially if you're on Central Expressway. And thank you very much. God bless you all.